In the quiet corners of Silicon Valley, a silent epidemic rages among the very people celebrated as visionaries and disruptors. While the tech world glorifies the hustle culture of 80-hour workweeks and relentless drive, founders like Austin Hines and Aaron Swartz, brilliant minds who ultimately took their own lives, reveal the devastating toll of entrepreneurship's dark side. The Resilient Founder by Mahendra Ramsinhani stands as the first comprehensive exploration of founder mental health, a book that Brad Feld, who contributed the foreword and has openly discussed his own battles with depression, describes as dynamite. Since its publication, the book has become required reading in accelerator programs worldwide and has been embraced by high-profile entrepreneurs seeking to understand the psychological toll of building companies. Ramsinhani's work emerged from his realization that managing internal struggles proves far more challenging than handling investor relationships, a truth that resonated deeply across the startup ecosystem. The entrepreneurial journey is often portrayed as a heroic quest, overcoming obstacles, disrupting industries, and changing the world. Yet beneath this glossy narrative lies a troubling reality. Founders face depression at rates significantly higher than the general population. When a founder named Mark committed suicide, Ramsinhani experienced conflicting emotions of sadness, guilt, and anger, particularly when other investors focused on business concerns rather than human loss. This tragic pattern repeats across the startup world, where founders oscillate between aspirations and harsh realities. The entrepreneurial mindset itself creates vulnerability. Founders deliberately seek risk to fill psychological voids, often ignoring warning signals while selecting perspectives that confirm their worldview. This becomes both their greatest strength and weakness. Conditioned to never give up, they frequently don't know when to pause or ask for help, behaving as if invincible. Their confidence becomes their ally, while their lack of self-awareness remains their Achilles' heel. External triggers further compound these challenges. Research shows stressful life events strongly correlate with major depression episodes, and startup life inherently includes many depression triggers: job loss, financial instability, legal hassles, and marital challenges. Marital problems increase depression odds by 8.39 times, financial problems by 5.85 times, and divorce by 5.22 times. Legal problems become even more impactful 3 months after the event, increasing depression risk by 10.81 times. The glorified image of the 24/7 workaholic founder persists despite research correlations between workaholism and depression. Ryan Kaldbeck of CircleUp admits his refusal to take breaks hurt himself, his family, and company. When founders become stalled, focusing on process rather than outcomes helps them regain momentum. Small daily actions create resilience, while establishing consistent routines around work and self-care provides a sense of control when everything else feels chaotic. To build resilience, founders must first understand their psychological operating system. This internal architecture consists of three key components that Aristotle identified centuries ago: logos, reasoning; pathos, emotions; and ethos, ethics. Most entrepreneurs aren't naturally balanced between these forces, which creates both their unique capabilities and their vulnerabilities. The ego, that mysterious construct that appears as we enter adulthood, serves as both our greatest ally and worst enemy. Freud defined ego as the function that categorizes the external world and discriminates between our own contending desires. Our ego shapes both our self-image, how capable or confused we see ourselves, and our worldview, how we perceive circumstances and others around us. A founder's ego is necessarily stronger than most, refusing to accept the status quo or quietly adjust to the social environment. Instead, it wants to establish its presence and make a dent in the world. Such an ego benefits society when it functions skillfully to achieve objectives. However, an overinflated ego without purpose or authenticity becomes destructive. As Hafiz warns, a gigantic ego keeps you busy with worries and bills, leaving little time to sing in this world. Beneath the ego lies the id, our basic needs and instinctual drives without moral judgment or restraint. Unlike the ego, the id offers no value judgments of right or wrong. It simply demands immediate gratification. A baby exemplifies the id, a delightful ball of flesh driven by instinctual needs. As we grow, the id manifests as a storm of desires, ranging from essential needs to mindless addictions. What drives some founders to pursue moonshot ideas like mining asteroids or colonizing Mars, while others remain content with conventional careers? One theory suggests that the bigger the psychological hole, the grander the problems we seek. These quests fulfill hidden needs for love, fame, fortune, attention, validation, or approval that simpler pursuits cannot satisfy. Balancing these forces is the superego, our internal moral voice pushing us to do the right thing while potentially arousing guilt or shame. This inner critic, shaped by parental influence, religious teachings, and social constructs, establishes our ethical guardrails. When shareholder value becomes unhinged from moral considerations, businesses may produce socially harmful products while still delivering profits, as Philip Morris demonstrated when entering the Czech Republic, commissioning a report highlighting how early deaths from smoking would save the government $30 million annually in healthcare and pension costs. Ethics and business make strange bedfellows, with lofty mission statements often adjusted or abandoned when success and money arrive. Google's original "Don't be evil" motto, later changed to "Do the right thing," contrasts with Uber's win-at-all-costs approach, which included unfair tactics against competitors and software designed to thwart regulators. Similar ethical pivots can be seen across the tech landscape, from Facebook's privacy controversies to Amazon's worker treatment debates, highlighting how initial idealistic values often clash with the pressures of scale and profit. Brian Armstrong, Coinbase's CEO, took a bold stance during social unrest by declaring the company would not engage in broader societal issues unrelated to their core mission. He believed impact comes with focus and that social activism can destroy value by creating distraction and internal division. When he offered generous severance to employees who disagreed with this position, 5% of the team left. This ethical stance demonstrated how a company can affirm its culture and values during chaotic times, maintaining its moral compass while pursuing its broader mission. The decision sparked intense debate in Silicon Valley, with some praising the clarity, while others criticized the apparent lack of social responsibility. An ethical framework begins with a company's position and perspective within external social conditions. There are no absolutes. Some ethics are straightforward, while others remain subjective, evolving with time and place. For instance, environmental responsibility has shifted from a fringe concern to a core business imperative over recent decades. Data privacy standards have similarly evolved, with practices once considered acceptable now viewed as unethical. Two contrasting perspectives emerge. One prioritizes strategy and profit as competitive advantages that enable social good, like Microsoft's transformation under Satya Nadella, while the other puts corporate culture, well-being, and higher purpose first, as exemplified by Patagonia's environmental activism, believing profits naturally follow. The challenge lies in finding balance, where a strong ego can effectively negotiate between moral imperatives and business necessities. Companies like Ben & Jerry's have shown how to maintain ethical commitments while building successful businesses, while others like WeWork demonstrate the risks of losing sight of core values in pursuit of growth. As Einstein reminded technical professionals, concern for humanity must remain central to all endeavors, ensuring innovations become blessings rather than curses. This balance requires constant vigilance and regular reassessment of how business practices align with stated values. The rise of stakeholder capitalism has further complicated this dynamic, demanding companies consider not just shareholders, but employees, customers, communities, and the environment in their decision-making. This has led to the emergence of benefit corporations and certified B Corps, creating new legal frameworks for businesses to pursue both profit and purpose. However, these structures also highlight the ongoing tension between ethical ideals and market realities. Our minds function as sophisticated logical processors that make countless decisions, calculate complex trade-offs, and navigate competing desires throughout each day. They move fluidly between past experiences, present challenges, and future possibilities, creating both vibrant fantasies that bring joy and dark scenarios that trigger anxiety. Despite its fundamental importance to mental health and human behavior, fewer than 5% of practicing therapists have had even one formal lecture defining the mind and its operations. Renowned neuroscientist Antonio Damasio provides a scientific framework, describing it as an organism forming neural representations that can become images, be manipulated in thought, and eventually influence behavior, highlighting the intricate connection between neural activity and conscious experience. The mind's core functions include attention/concentration, analysis/discrimination, and memory/recall, each playing vital roles in our daily functioning. When overwhelmed, these areas show distinct patterns of weakness and deterioration. Concentration has become increasingly difficult in our modern era of endless browser tabs, push notifications, and constant digital interruptions. Research shows the average person now switches tasks every 3 minutes, severely impacting their ability to maintain focused attention. Our analytical abilities help us make decisions through both inductive and deductive reasoning, though they notably falter when deeply held moral beliefs or emotional triggers interfere with logical processing. Memory, whether working, short-term, episodic, experience-based, semantic, fact-based, procedural, skill-based, or perceptual, sensory, stores both joyful and painful experiences. However, numerous studies demonstrate that memory can be highly selective and surprisingly unreliable, often reconstructing events rather than perfectly preserving them. Under sustained stress and anxiety, the mind's executive functions frequently become severely dysfunctional. Many founders and executives experience what psychologists term executive dysfunction due to chronic multitasking and constant interruptions that progressively exhaust both motivation and attention spans. The pressure to maintain multiple mental threads while constantly context-switching creates a cognitive burden that few can sustain indefinitely. For those facing cognitive overload with adequate recovery periods, this can lead to a cascade of impairments: inability to prioritize tasks effectively, difficulty maintaining focus on important projects, challenges in regulating emotional responses, and struggling to sustain effort toward long-term goals. This mental exhaustion often drives individuals to seek quick relief through various substances, with alcohol being particularly common due to its temporary calming effects and social acceptability. Research indicates that up to 73% of entrepreneurs report experiencing mental health challenges, with cognitive overwhelm being a primary contributor. When these internal forces, ego, id, superego, and mind fall out of balance, therapy offers a path toward integration and healing. Psychotherapy exists at the intersection of science and art, blending proven techniques with situational context. While widely accepted in the Western world, other cultures address neuroticism through traditional rituals. Freud proposed that our psyche consists of three parts, id, ego, and superego, in perpetual tension. These forces make incompatible claims that can't be simultaneously satisfied, potentially breaking down the ego. Like CEOs juggling demands from boards, teams, and markets, we struggle with these competing forces. Freud believed psychoanalysis should strengthen the ego, making it independent from the superego. Jung rejected the blank slate view of human development, instead proposing a collective unconscious. He developed theories about our shadow self, the repressed side operating silently, and how dreams reveal subconscious wishes. Jung embraced spiritualism and mysticism, famously stating about God, "I do not need to believe in God, I know. Adler focused on present situations rather than past traumas. His pragmatic approach emphasized solving current problems instead of dwelling on unchangeable childhood experiences. Writing for common people without fancy jargon, Adler's contributions were widely adopted but rarely credited. He rejected the traditional therapist's couch for two chairs, establishing equal relationships with clients. Founders often resist therapy by ignoring warning signs and making excuses. They dismiss therapy as glorified paid friendship or mumbo-jumbo talk that's too expensive. Some believe talking to bar friends accomplishes the same goal, not recognizing that casual conversations rarely identify behavioral patterns or provide skilled intervention. Other excuses include lack of time, money, or access to professionals. Jerry Colonna, CEO coach and former venture capitalist, has committed to therapy for life because working with trained professionals offers reliable, confidential pathways toward stability and productivity. Therapists don't provide happiness or magic wands. Ultimately, we're responsible for choices leading to balanced minds. However, therapists identify and remove obstacles blocking our natural growth. Beyond therapy, founders can build resilience through specific practices that have helped others navigate the entrepreneurial roller coaster. These aren't merely self-help techniques, but battle-tested approaches that address the unique challenges of startup life. The first prescription is what Bertrand Russell called an organized diminution of work. Studies show that setting personal goals, practicing gratitude, and using personal strengths can reduce depressive symptoms. Founders show practical approaches, making lists of small achievable goals, preparing perfect day lists, prioritizing top three tasks each morning, and starting with enjoyable tasks to build momentum. The myth of working 24/7 must be challenged through deliberate disconnection, turning off devices by 9 p.m., engaging in unrelated activities, or journaling to release internal pressures. Physical activity provides a crucial escape from rumination. The body has a magical way of slowing down that overactive mind, offering relief from the mental overload. The relationship between breath and mind is like that of a mother and child, writes BKS Iyengar. Many founders notice erratic breathing patterns when stressed, holding breath, clenching fists, tightening shoulders like a frightened animal. Studies show clear links between breathing disorders and depression, making breath awareness a simple yet powerful technique for mental well-being. Walking in nature offers profound benefits beyond mere exercise. As Thoreau noted, the moment my legs begin to move, my thoughts begin to flow. Studies across 24 forests show 15-20-minute walks significantly lower cortisol, pulse rate, blood pressure, and sympathetic nerve activity while increasing parasympathetic nerve activity. Even urban walks among street trees correlate with lower antidepressant prescriptions. Meditation creates a fascinating dynamic where we become both observer and observed, similar to the quantum physics double-slit experiment, where particles change behavior when watched. As Eckhart Tolle writes, the beginning of freedom is the realization that you are not the thinker. This higher consciousness activates when we observe our thoughts. Though meditation challenges many founders who struggle with sitting still and quieting their racing minds, even bad meditation has value. Moving from analytical thinking to feeling represents another crucial shift. Poetry offers founders a direct path to feeling rather than thinking. E.E. Cummings declares, "Poetry is feeling, not knowing or believing or thinking." Jerry Colonna, CEO coach, reads poetry to entrepreneurs as soul nourishment during difficult times. Music provides another avenue for emotional regulation. One entrepreneur reports, "When things would get overwhelming, I would lose myself in the strumming of a guitar. I play for a few hours, and I'm even getting good at it." Counterintuitively, volunteering offers an effective path out of depression. Studies of over 1,000 participants with serious mental illness showed volunteers reported better health than non-volunteers. Those who volunteered less experienced more pain, lower perceived life purpose, increased depressive symptoms, and decreased physical activity. One founder shares how volunteering for a suicide hotline gave them purpose and perspective. My ability to listen and gently support the callers gave me both a sense of purpose and perspective, that my problem seemed so minuscule in comparison. Our shadow side contains darker qualities we often repress. Jung warns that the less it is embodied in conscious life, the blacker and denser it is. And when unintegrated, the conscious becomes the slave of the autonomous shadow. Working with our shadow involves accepting its existence, welcoming it, and integrating it rather than repressing it. Bill Plotkin's shadow work with recurring dreams of threatening thugs revealed surprising insights. When role-played as the victim while companions acted as thugs, he discovered the thugs possessed an authenticity, courage, chutzpah, and rough love my ego lacked. This humbling revelation showed that what we fear often contains qualities we secretly admire but haven't integrated. Thomas More suggests that during dark times, we must surrender to the moment without trying to architect the next phase. Rather than forcing growth, we allow all experiences their place. Your job is to be affected by them, letting them do their work for you. Yumi Sakugawa recommends welcoming our inner demons, having tea and cake with them, as they're lonely, desperate to be acknowledged and heard. Our projections onto others often reveal our own untapped potential. Jung noted that the unlived life of the parent is the greatest burden the child must carry. What we admire or envy in others, leadership, emotional intelligence, grace, exists as dormant seeds within us. Spirituality, not necessarily organized religion, but connection to something beyond the material, offers another avenue for resilience. In a world where reason is worshipped and spirituality often stigmatized, many logical minds reject the mysterious. Yet spirituality's therapeutic role cannot be denied. It offers gratitude for beauty, perspective beyond the rat race, empathy for others' suffering, and belief in something larger than ourselves. When reflecting on a life well lived, entrepreneurs must look beyond their drive to disrupt the status quo. Based on longitudinal studies from Harvard Medical School tracking 800-plus people from teens to old age, five key factors contribute to a fulfilling life. Developing an integrated identity independent from parents and social influences, forming intimate, reciprocal relationships, progressing in one's career across competence, commitment, compensation, and contentment, giving to others and supporting community, and maintaining integrity by accepting life's rewards without regrets. The final challenge lies in how we support founders experiencing depression. Depressed individuals often can't respond to initial offers of help. Researchers Edward Hagen and Kristen Syme compare this to workers not ending a strike until employers offer significant salary increases. Initial help offers are too small to solve serious problems. Founders avoid seeking help due to several key concerns: fear of judgment and stigma, I feel broken, fear of appearing weak or incapable, fear of workplace marginalization, a career-limiting move, fear of being taken advantage of, and fear of losing respect. They also resist seeking help to avoid pity or false assurances, not wanting different treatment, and from a sense of responsibility, not wanting to burden others with negativity. What depressed founders actually need is surprisingly simple: normal friendships and support like any human being, mild check-ins through calls, texts, walks, or meals, safe environments with authentic engagement free of judgment, non-judgmental listening with comfort and silence, unconditional love, and better education about depression. One founder notes, "I just need someone to hold my hand and say some simple, comforting words like, 'I too would feel stressed. I know building a company is scary.'" The approach to a depressed person should be as you would approach a wounded animal in the forest, slowly building trust and letting them reveal their wounds. A 6-point code of conduct emphasizes being reliable, steady, supportive without agenda, responsible about professional help limits, trustworthy without judgment, and detached from expectations about recovery. As the Little Prince teaches, you must be very patient. Words are the source of misunderstandings. Sometimes the most profound support comes through simple presence, as author Parker Palmer discovered when a Quaker elder visited him daily during depression to massage his feet. This friend barely spoke, occasionally offering gentle observations like, "I can feel your struggle today," or "I feel you're a little stronger." Through this simple tactile connection, his friend created a sacred space of relationship that helped him believe he could eventually come around from the dark side of the moon. The entrepreneurial journey inevitably includes dark nights of the soul, those moments of doubt, fear, and uncertainty that can shake even the most confident founders. Building resilience doesn't mean avoiding these passages, but developing the capacity to navigate them with greater awareness and fewer lasting scars. As Samuel Beckett realized while writing Waiting for Godot, "I shall always be depressed, but what comforts me is the realization that I can now accept this dark side as the commanding side of my personality. In accepting it, I will make it work for me." The resilient founder isn't one who never experiences darkness, but one who has developed the psychological resources to integrate these experiences into a meaningful narrative. This integration often involves specific practices, maintaining a regular reflection routine, building a strong support network of mentors and peers, and creating clear boundaries between work and personal life. Successful entrepreneurs often point to their lowest moments, failed products, lost investments, team conflicts, as the crucibles that forge their greatest strengths. Through understanding their internal operating system, seeking appropriate help when needed, and practicing rituals that nourish mind, body, and spirit, founders can transform their vulnerabilities into sources of strength and wisdom. This might mean establishing morning meditation practices, regular exercise routines, or weekly therapy sessions. Many successful founders have found that implementing structured self-care practices not only improves their personal well-being, but also enhances their decision-making and leadership capabilities. As the Persian poet Rumi summarized life, "I was raw, I was cooked, I was burnt." The entrepreneurial journey encompasses all three states: the raw enthusiasm of beginning, the cooking process of challenges and growth, and sometimes the burning of crisis and transformation. The raw stage brings the energy of new ideas and possibilities. The cooking phase develops judgment and skill through experience. And the burning phase, while painful, often leads to the most profound insights and innovations. The resilient founder learns to embrace each stage, finding meaning not despite the difficulties, but through them. Building resilience is also about developing practical tools for crisis management. This includes creating contingency plans, maintaining financial buffers, and building redundancy into critical business systems. Equally important is cultivating emotional intelligence, the ability to recognize and regulate one's emotional responses to stress and challenge. Many founders find that regular journaling, peer support groups, and professional coaching provide essential frameworks for processing experiences and extracting valuable lessons from both successes and setbacks.